everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith. And every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who does not take it real seriously, but who does have real plans to be on a, was it 30-hour round trip train ride to Dallas this weekend?
Cannot wait.
Boy, we're counting down the days now, huh?
I think I've talked myself into train shower. I think I have.
No. Yeah. All right. Walk me through the process of talking yourself into train shower and what it takes for you to convince yourself this is a good idea.
Well, number one, I have to take train shower on the way down there, I believe. Because on the way back, I think I'll be far too filthy for train shower. I think.
And weirdly, yeah, the math does work out that way. It sounds counterintuitive, but when it's train shower, yeah.
Yeah.
So now you said you have to take a, you don't have to take a train shower.
Anymore. Yeah, there's not a rule as far as I can tell. I haven't read all the fine print.
I've been on the Amtrak a lot. Let me tell you, there's no rule about showering.
But the sleeper cars all have a private shower. Thankfully, a private shower stall. I think the public shower stalls are in coach.
Sure.
But yeah, should be nice.
Sorry, something just fell over in my room. It's haunted. So are you going to wear sandals in the shower?
Flops? I'm probably going to wear sneakers, quite honestly.
I'm going to put on a suit, actually, the most coverage I can possibly have. That's fun. And why are you doing a shower?
When else am I going to get a chance to take a shower? While riding America's, world trailing rail system.
You know, you also have a chance to world trail. Yep. And you also have a chance to not take a shower.
Right. Yeah.
This is your chance to shun the shower. Most people don't get that chance. But you have that chance and you're saying no.
But that's like at least one day a week I already shun the shower. But how many days a week do I take train shower? 0 days.
So far. What if you like train shower so much that you can't quit train shower? Now you have to take a train every week, at least once a week, to take train shower.
What if the train crashes while I'm in train shower and I die? And the autopsy has to note that I may have lived if I hadn't been taking train shower.
And then your ghost will be a naked ghost wearing sneakers.
Mm-hmm. Haunting the four people still taking
Amtrak. Everyone's going to be so confused. I love this for you. So you're going to, what are your plans? What are you going to do for 30 hours?
Oh, gosh. Nothing. Sitting quiet.
I was thinking if I was on that train, I would probably sit there and I would just stare at the wall the entire time and be so happy.
Mm-hmm.
So happy.
Yeah. Okay. Looking forward to it. It's got a little upper bunk, a little lower bunk. I don't know which one I'm going to sleep in yet.
You can switch.
I could do both.
I certainly could. Yeah. Yeah. And then you're transferring to a bus once you get to Texarkana.
Correct. Not as good. Not as good, I've heard. It's not a sleeper bus.
You gonna take a bus shower?
Yeah. Hope not.
That one's not with water.
No.
It's very different.
If I do end up taking bus shower, I probably will have to take train shower following it, I figure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to want to take a shower before you get in the pool at the place we're staying, too, please. I think we would all appreciate that. If you wade into the pool and suddenly this like blossom of purple mist just wafts off of you, we're going to have some questions.
I will have no answers.
All right. Gosh, what else should we talk about today? There was one other thing I was going to talk to you about. What do you got going on?
Just counting down the hours. I think we're at like 72 hours till
so close. Love train baseball time. Trip. Ooh, love buddy. Baseball trip. Yeah, I love that you're setting off on the baseball trip a full 24 hours earlier than I am, and you're going to arrive about an hour earlier. That's fun. That's a fun new twist.
me arriving at the scheduled time from Amtrak is pretty optimistic, I would say. Mm-hmm. I'm planning on being there on Friday at some point, but there's a lot of hours in the day on Friday.
Hoping to see the game. Hoping to see the evening game. We'll see. That's great. I can't wait. It's a good group this year. Mm-hmm. Same group that went, everyone, it's 100% the same that went to Toronto last year. Right?
Fantastic. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
It'll be good. It'll be good. It doesn't mean I have to do some research on the road, which I don't love. But, you know, maybe we'll find a ghost in Texas to do the work for us. Is Cardinals still playing?
I think they're in the ninth. They're in the ninth. They're up 7-4 in the ninth.
It's pretty good.
In the ninth.
Pretty good, yep.
Old Nolan hit a big fly. He's back,
Boy's baby.
Back.
Man, to have that hit and take one day off, geez. To be young again and have access to so many steroids. good for him.
That's what the cameras picked up him screaming on the field was, "Oh my God, get me the good steroids." and the little kid in the front row was like, "What did he say, Daddy?" It's like, "Oh, he wants a hot dog. It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine." God, if science could put steroids in a hot dog, I would be jacked. I would be so jacked.
You just got to go to the store and you got to find the ones like where it's like a 24 pack of hot dogs for 89 cents. Those have a lot of steroids in them.
That's different. That's different. Yeah. that's true. I should be more clear.
It's pig steroids. It's probably the same thing.
Yeah, sure. That'll get you ripped. All right. Well, before we get to the episode today, I must tell you, Patrick, that this episode is sponsored by one of our listeners.
Oh, hey.
For a very special occasion, one of our super listeners, Nicole Zott, has sponsored this episode. And it's Nicole Zott to say happy anniversary to her husband, Zach Zott.
Zach Zott?
Zach Zott.
Oh, my gosh.
Zach Zott.
I love that.
Zach Zott.
Love that for him.
And Nicole sent a message for us to read, which is always the way to go because you do not want us winging these things. she's listened to the sponsored episodes in the past. So, happy anniversary to Nicole and Zach. And here are some prepared words from Nicole that, let's just kind of wash over you as I read them. Right. To my husband of 20 years. Yeah. They're pretty old. I truly believe we were meant to flunk out of our universities and meet at Merrimack Community College.
You have an awe button?
I am looking. I do somewhere. I think it's an awe, though. Let's see. Well. Hold on. What do I got here? I got something appropriate for this. Nope. It might be the best one we got.
It's closer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My life changed that fall morning in 1999 when you walked up to me in the quad. Did you know Merrimack has a quad?
I don't know.
It sounds like, shocking. Yeah.
Some call it a parking lot. We call it the quad.
For the casual listener, Merrimack is in St. Louis. Mm. So Nicole and her husband are. Do you know them?
I don't think so. I would have remembered Zach Zott.
What a small world, Zach Zott. Anyway, you walked up to me in the quad and asked to borrow a pencil.
Adorable.
Since that day, we have been inseparable. We grew together, finished our degrees, got married, have four horrible-looking children. No, sorry, beautiful children. This is beautiful. Have four beautiful children. And most importantly, we laugh every day. Thank you for laughing through this life with me. Happy 20th anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah. So happy anniversary, Zach. Happy anniversary, Nicole. I think these kids are going to make it.
Yeah, I don't think they're... I think they got a... better chance than kids from the 19th century of making it.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You're talking about Nicole and Zach. Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, the whole family. The whole family's going to be fine.
I'm sure they're all going to be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a Nicole. This is great. Nicole sent a fun fact.
Wham!
When Zach and I met, he was a manager at the Blockbuster in Richmond Heights.
No way!
I'm pretty sure, and I wanted to pick your brain. I think I dated someone from the Blockbuster in Richmond Heights. Who came to work at our Blockbuster?
Yes,
at Mizzou. Didn't she transfer out of the Richmond Heights store?
Out of a Blockbuster. I don't know where she.
I think it was Richmond Heights. Zach, do you know Rebecca?
We'll wait, Zach. Just yell real loud from the back.
Rebecca, the one we dated for a few weeks, and I gave her a very kind. I said, "Hey, will you watch my garden gnome for me for a while?"
Yes,
for reasons that made a lot of sense at the time that I cannot recall now. And then when I broke up with her, I did go back to her house to try to retrieve that gnome because it was very important to me. And she had smashed it in the creek in anger. So that's the kind of employee that Zach hired. He eventually went to work at Sam's Club in De Pere.
Hey.
There used to be an Applebee's at the bottom of the Sam's parking lot. I would meet up with him and his coworkers after work. And one night while drinking at Applebee's, Zach called around to different Blockbusters and cleared about $300 worth of late fees from everyone around the bar. Which is a power I never even considered using when we were managers of Blockbuster.
I think the problem here is that Zach was probably well-liked.
Okay.
He was calling in favors. We had no brownie points to give with anybody.
No, in fact, I think the other Blockbuster in town was corporate, and they hated us.
They were not fans. They did not like us one bit.
Anyway, so that is, thank you so much, Nicole, for sending in that lovely message and for the fun fact. We love a fun fact, as you know, and yeah, happy anniversary. It's really exciting. Thank you for letting us be a part of it. Patrick, any final words for the happy couple?
No, just best of luck. You know, hope things continue working out.
Yeah. Okay.
Hope we hear back from you in another 20 years.
I was going to say, we could use the money. Yeah. So please, if you can, you know, $25 in 20 years. It's not going to go as far as you'd think, but we could sure use it. All right. Well, with all that said, oh shit. No, I remember what it was.
Yeah.
Nope. I know I say this every time. I got to label these buttons. Where is it? I thought it was on this one. Hold on a second. Just hang in there for me, will you?
He walked up.
Nope. We have a dire ghost news update. A very important one. Everyone tune in and listen with all your ears, because this one affects all of us. Earlier this month, the New England Society for Psychic Research launched a Devils on the Run tour, which is a tour around the United States with multiple haunted artifacts, including Annabelle the doll.
No.
Now, you, Patrick, were here for our episode about Annabelle the doll, and you probably recall me saying that one of the conditions of Annabelle is you do not fucking touch her, you Correct. Do not take her out of her box, you do not move her, you do not do a thing with her. Mm. Now she's on tour, and you may be wondering, how's it going? Here's how it's going. So Annabelle first went to Louisiana. This was about a week and a half ago, I believe. While she was there, 10 inmates escaped from a jail in New Orleans, and a fire completely destroyed the Nottoway Plantation in northern Louisiana. So,
you know, we're kind of on the side of that one, but that's, you know, that's okay.
Yes. Yes. That one's fine. she's doing God's work out there.
Yeah.
Now she's in Texas. The internet the last few days has been in an absolute frenzy because it appears that Annabelle has escaped. she did not make an appearance at her scheduled show in Texas, her first one. Now, her handlers did put out a video saying she's fine and she's in containment. They did not offer any explanation of why she might not have been at the show.
Like Jurassic Park containment? Like, are they...
I can only assume. Bare minimum. It's worth noting she's not been seen in public since she left Louisiana. And here's some exciting news. This tour is going to go on, obviously. She is scheduled to be in Rock Island, Illinois on October 4th. And so we've got all summer to plan this. I think producer Ryan's got to make a trip to Rock Island.
Absolutely.
And be on the ground for when Annabelle the doll comes to Illinois. Mm-hmm. So Annabelle's loose, and she's causing chaos everywhere she goes. And maybe she may have run away.
I think
her little stuffed legs.
I think I may have found an expense that is worthy of draining the ITAG slush fund, and that is, how much money can Ryan pay them to touch Annabelle?
Oh, that's all. all I want is a video of Ryan touching Annabelle. And also making sure on that same video he gets all his last words out.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to last much longer. That's one of the last person that, as far as one of the people, I should say, that we talked about in our episode who touched Annabelle, then on the way home from that experience, drove headfirst into a semi-truck. So, Ryan, you don't listen to this. I don't even know. I'm not even going to address him. He hates the show. I'm going to text him later, though. We're going to get this ball rolling. And that is our ghost update for today. All right. So now I think we're ready. Patrick, are you ready to hear a ghost story?
Absolutely.
It's always good. The Sullivan brothers were born in Waterloo, Iowa. You know Waterloo?
Do I know Waterloo? I don't think I know Waterloo, Iowa.
You have a weird encyclopedic knowledge of Iowa.
So I know Waterloo, Illinois. I don't know Waterloo, Iowa.
It's different. Okay.
Yeah.
They were born to Thomas and Aletta Sullivan. Mm-hmm. The oldest brother was George. Now, George was born in 1914, to give you a sense of where we are here in time. Then came Frank in 1916, Joe in 1918, Matt in 1919, mm-hmm. and Al in 1922.
Okay.
So five boys born between 1914 and 1922. They also had a sister, Genevieve, born right there in the middle in 1917.
I see.
So Aletta was, she's done. This mess of kids, they're all working the early farm life in the early 1900s, as one does in Iowa. And eventually, Genevieve falls head over heels for a local boy named Bill Ball. Full name, William Vinton Ball. I guess Bill Ball is a good choice.
I might have got my Vinton Ball at that point. Depends.
Let's see. So how do I want to do this here? I want to show you this picture of Billy Boy here. Here's a picture. Come on. Fire that will. If I had more tabs, I could do this better. Yeah, maybe close all my tabs. Here is a picture of Bill Ball.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Striking.
A good-looking Iowa boy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of chin. Maybe two chins. A lot of chins.
Straight teeth.
Yeah.
Straight teeth. It's a lot of chins, and they're so square.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Small ears.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, now I can only see the ears. That's fair.
That's Bill. So Genevieve and Bill, they're going steady. Things are going great. Lots of cornfield kisses happening with these two kids. But eventually, Bill decides to enlist in the U.S. Navy.
Mm-hmm. As we saw in his full sailor garb in that
correct.
Lovely photo.
His full Donald Duck, as we call it, I think. And God, as I was going to say, as we were supposed to record, this was actually Memorial Day. So in some ways, this was kind of a topical story.
Mm-hmm. When this comes out 2 weeks from now. Yeah.
You know, that's how we do it here. And Is This a Ghost? He goes into the Navy, and he was stationed on the USS Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I will say, so we have... I should mention this right at the top. We have sort of accidentally stumbled into a new suite on this podcast, which is Warship Suite.
Okay.
We're in the Warship Suite. Remember a couple weeks ago, we did the Orang Medan because Erin wanted to, she requested a ghost ship story.
Right.
I found that one. And then just by happenstance, no planning at all, we had Caroline Jones sent in a story about the SS Great Britain, which is great timing. And now we're going to talk about a different kind of warship here. We're not going to talk about the Arizona. The Arizona is kind of a famous one. Mm-hmm. We will eventually talk about the USS Arizona because that's a whole thing. However, we're going to talk. So we're in the middle of this week. Mm-hmm. We got a whole thing going on. Mm-hmm. Do you like warships? Listen to Is This a Ghost? we handle that topic with all the respect and aplomb that it deserves. Anyway, so he's on the USS Arizona. Now, are you familiar with the Arizona?
It's a boat, from what I understand, right?
Oh, boy. Big can't wait for this.
Above the water, yeah, not
it's
below?
A big boat. Big boat above the water. Okay. Sure is. The Arizona was commissioned in 1916, and it mostly stayed in the Pacific Ocean. It did venture out sometimes, but its home base was California, and it was mostly used for training exercises.
Mm, okay.
Though it was also used to support relief efforts after an earthquake in Long Beach in 1933. Mm-hmm. And in 1934, it was, this is a quote, it was filmed for a role in the 1934 James Cagney film, Here Comes the Navy. So the ship lands a role in this movie. And honestly, probably got top billing over Gloria Stewart, the female lead in that film. Then in April of 1940, the USS Arizona was sent from California to Hawaii. As a deterrent to threats of Japanese imperialism.
Oh, okay. How'd that go? Yeah.
Well, let's see. Its new port was Pearl Harbor. Oh, no. New port's Pearl Harbor. And like I say, we'll do a full episode on the Arizona someday. This was one of the more famous ships that was sunk during the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And Bill Ball was on board the ship at that time. So he that's how he ended.
Mm-hmm.
That's his story. So Genevieve back home in Iowa, she hears this news and she's absolutely wrecked to hear the news of Bill's death. Her brothers, and her so many brothers, they are also sad. They're angry. They're feeling all the things, right? Mm-hmm. This is the whole mood of the U.S. at that point is, of mm-hmm. course, there's so much anger and we've been like putting off like joining the war, but now we're going to be thrown mm-hmm. into it. They're so mad. Bill is killed in particular. They decide to avenge his death.
Okay. Is okay.
I know what you're going to ask, and the answer is yes, and we'll get to it.
Which one of them is Matt Damon? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll get there. We'll talk about it. All five Sullivan brothers march into the recruitment center on January 3rd, 1942. All five of them at once join the Navy. And just to give you a little insight into their home lives, Al was married to a woman named Catherine May, and they had one son whose name was Jimmy. Joe had a fiance named Margaret Jaros, and Matt also had a fiance, Beatrice Imperato.
Mm-hmm.
George and Frank were blessedly unencumbered. So they all go and join the Navy to avenge Bill. But they tell the recruiter, we're only going to join under one condition. Would you like to guess?
We get to fight the Japanese.
I mean, that's kind of par for the course.
Well, but I mean, we're fighting a lot of stuff at this time.
That's true. A couple different theaters. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. Fight the Japanese on a boat. I don't know. Give us all guns.
Okay. Well, you're very bad at this game. They're only going to join if they can all serve together on the same boat.
Oh, that's a terrible idea.
It is a very bad idea.
It's like whenever twins enroll in an elementary school, they're like, first thing we're doing is splitting you two the fuck up. This is absolutely not happening.
Yeah, like you took that way with it because it's like, oh, you guys are going to cause trouble. I was thinking like, this is why you don't have the president and vice president ride on Air Force One at the same time. No. But, well, I don't know. We'll see how this goes.
They just eat rapscallions, you know.
See how these scamps get along. You know. I bet every single other sailor on that ship was like, these fucking guys, these fucking Sullivans. Come on. Now, George and Frank, who were the two oldest, they had served in the Navy before, which probably actually had something to do with their lack of family ties. Mm. They were the ones who were, yeah, were blessedly unencumbered.
Yeah, they're married to the sea. I get it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you understand. And all five, so the U.S. Navy, of course, they need bodies at this point. This is before the draft. So they're like, yeah, you want to get on there? Sure, whatever. Yeah, we'll meet all your demands. And they assign all five Sullivan brothers to the USS Juno. It is worth noting that a few months later, the Navy unveiled a new policy of separating siblings. but they didn't enforce it too strictly.
Okay.
And that's going to, so keep that in your back pocket.
Right.
Right. Now, obviously, they're already enlisted, but mm-hmm. it's later. Okay. So you got that. Anyway, back to the USS Juno. All five Sullivan brothers are stationed there. It was considered a light cruiser, which means something. It's
for cruising. Really, I get it.
It's a pretty badass looking boat. let me show you this. There it is.
Oh, I go cruising in that.
I mean, that's a cruising boat. That's, mm-hmm. that's a ship, man. Look at that paint job. Look at that little swirl.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. That's nice.
That's how you blend in with the waves. It's camouflage at sea right there.
Yeah. Now, the colors are all wrong. Right. But they were like, people are only seeing in black and white right now. It's 1942. So that's their ship. That's the Juno. The Sullivans are not the only brothers on board, by the way. There were at least 30 sets of brothers on the Juno.
Okay.
So many brothers. And then here is a pretty famous photo of the Sullivan brothers together on the USS Juno.
Hmm. Yep. Bunch of Iowa boys.
Those are brothers. Mm-hmm. Those are some corn-fed Iowa brothers. That's our guys. So that's them. So they're on board. Everything's going great. In August of 1942, the Juno was sent to the Pacific Theater to provide support for the Guadalcanal campaign in World War II, which to them is great because that's where they're going to fight the Japanese,
right.
Which, as you mentioned, it's not Germany. It's not France. It's where they want to go to avenge Bill's death. Their whole trip out there is going fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, but it's war.
I bet it's really fun. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's like if you go on a Norwegian cruise today.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that,
right?
Except you get a cool outfit.
Yeah, and the guns are bigger,
but not by as much as you would think.
It is surprising.
Early in the morning of November 13th, the USS Juno exchanged fire with a Japanese destroyer called the Udachi. Now, neither ship is hit,
mm-hmm.
but the whole skirmish does draw the attention of another Japanese destroyer called the Amatsukaze. The Amatsukaze says, what's going on over here? And they come around, and they fire four torpedoes at the Juno. And one of those four hits it.
Oof.
That torpedo breaks the keel and completely disables the ship's electrical system.
Oh.
And that feels like an important one. You're an engineer. Does that seem important?
I probably, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's probably important for the lights, I would imagine, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, pretty dark down there now.
Yeah, but I bet it breaks all the air conditioning. I bet it's really uncomfortable in the boat now.
I bet they were just...
it's so warm.
Oh, no. They had it cranked down to 67. Everyone was so happy. Now it's terrible. So the Juno, it's still floating. It's not, that bad. It's not, it didn't breach the hull, but it's in bad shape. Like it's not, you don't want to be out there in that. So they leave the battle. They decide they're going to go away. They'll be back, but they're going to time out, everybody.
Yeah.
Time out. So the Juno heads back for the ally base of Espiritu Santo, which was, the best I can tell, it's kind of like a hospital center for damaged warships and the Allied partners. So there's a bunch of damaged ships there, right? And that's where they're going to bring their ship. And on their way to the harbor, the Juno passes by an active fight between the USS San Francisco and a Japanese submarine, the I-26.
Oh, okay.
So Juno's just going on its happy little business, right? It's just trying to get back to port. Over here... mm-hmm. There's a fight's going on.
Right.
San Francisco and his sub. They're doing this. Juno, over here. Don't mind us.
Yeah.
It's going to boop, boop, boop.
Nothing
boop,
to do boop, with boop. This.
Yeah. Nope. Not my battle, not my war. And so they're skirting around this. And while they do that, the Japanese submarine fires two torpedoes at the USS San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Both torpedoes missed that boat.
Oh.
And then one of them... keeps going and hits the Juno.
It's such a big ocean. How do you get
the
hit?
The odds of this are unbelievable. This is it's terrible luck.
I told you building the keel out of giant magnets was the stupidest idea you ever had. But you insisted. You said they don't rust. Magnets don't rust. Why not? Now you
I
see.
Wanted to put my drawings on the outside so everyone could see how good I'm getting. It was a mistake. In hindsight, okay, fine. Yeah. I'll admit it was a mistake. So that torpedo that hits the Juno, not only does it hit the Juno, which again is just sheer bad luck, it also happens to hit the ammunition magazines.
Ooh, big boom.
That's a big boom. So the USS Juno, as it's like limping back into harbor, is accidentally blown in half.
Oh.
And it very quickly sinks in this like fiery explosion. Now the ships in the harbor, it's very close to the harbor. It almost made it. It's very close. The ships in the harbor at Espiritu Santo can see all this happen. So they're watching it and they're like, holy shit, I cannot believe this happened. And you got to think people are like, why the fuck did the San Francisco engage a submarine this close? Like, boys, take it further. Yeah. Take it outside.
Although I can imagine the guy whose like work order was to fix this boat is like, quietly crossing it off of his list.
Squeak.
He gets on the phone. Actually, I think I can fit you guys in this week. Yeah. No, I'm all cleared up, actually.
Oh, boy. I wonder if any veterans listen to this show and if we are going to lose all of them after this episode.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I guess what's one more group of people that stop listening to us?
We're going to check our own thing off the list. I will say it, you know, it's hard to do a comedy podcast about ghosts because just the stories, they're usually not pretty good, actually. Anyway, so the ships in the harbor at Espiritu Santo all see this happen. Now, Gilbert Hoover, he is currently the senior officer present afloat, or mm-hmm. the SOPA, mm-hmm. which apparently is a thing. Basically, he's the guy in charge. Of mm-hmm. all the boats that are floating in the harbor, he sure. is the most senior of them.
Okay.
So he gets to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So he sees this happen, and he's like, boy, no one survived that. That was crazy. That's gone. That's all. Those people are dead, for sure.
And everyone around him is like, yeah, why do you keep saying that?
Just, hey, everyone, I just want to just be real clear here.
Yeah.
Ooh,
oh, boy, did you see that? Gross, really. That's what that was.
And he says, also, like, if we go look for survivors... Mm-hmm. We'll just be sitting ducks for the Japanese.
Yeah. This sounds like someone who just ordered dinner is what it sounds like to me.
And speaking of Japanese, my takeout is almost here. So we could just like hang low. I've got this ramen coming and I've heard great things about mm-hmm. the chef. So he orders all ships to either the ones who are in the harbor, stay mm-hmm. in the harbor. If you're coming toward the harbor, keep coming toward the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like, don't go help them. They're all dead, and you'll just die. That's his take.
Doesn't sound very nice.
It's not nice. I mean, I get it. Like, yeah, there is a submarine out there, and that's mm-hmm. famously below the water and harder to see. And
sure.
is pretty good at firing shots at things accidentally. So that's tough. But you would think you'd want to send someone out after your friends. Yeah,
a little rowboat. Pick up some dudes in a rowboat.
Yeah.
Does that hurt? I don't think it hurts anything.
Now it would take a lot of rowboat. Yeah. You could bring a big warship out there. That feels a little bit better. But yeah, rowboat also works. Why not? So he orders all these boats to stay in place or to keep coming in. Now it turns out about 100 of the Juno's crew had survived, actually, the attack. And were left in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this because Gilbert Hoover, the SOPA, the guy in charge, he did call into request for the closest B-17 bomber to fly over the area just to double check for survivors.
Oh, okay.
Submarine can't hit a plane.
Yeah.
and if it does, that's not me.
I'm a boat captain. I'm not responsible for planes that get shot from boats.
Nope. So the nearest B-17 does do this. Mm-hmm. They fly overhead. And when they did, they saw about 100 men in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, okay, good. So they radioed in, get the boats out there. Absolutely. The problem is, because the Japanese were so close, obviously, one mm-hmm. had just shot this boat to hell.
Right.
The crew on board the B-17 was under orders to not break radio silence in case the Japanese were listening.
Mm-hmm.
So they fly over. They see about 100 people in the water, mm-hmm. but they cannot tell anyone because they are under orders to not use the radio.
Right.
So they keep flying. They couldn't pass the message on until they landed, which was several hours later.
Ooh. And what was the point of them flying over in the first place? Like,
I'm sorry, check for survivors.
Right, sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Check for survivors.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Yeah.
Yeah. They checked. They saw them. Great. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know where they went next. Like, I don't know. So that's obviously a giant clusterfuck.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not enough, they file this report after they land, the B-17 mm-hmm. folks do. They file the report. That report of the location of survivors was mixed in with other pending paperwork. Goes unnoticed for several days. So headquarters doesn't realize that there are 100 survivors in the water
mm-hmm.
until a week after the plane sees them. So they finally see this. It's been a week, and they're like, oh, shit, we should send a rescue crew.
Mm-hmm.
So they do.
Right.
Now, it's been a week. during that week, the survivors, of course, many of them were wounded
mm-hmm.
from the explosion of the ship.
Right.
They were wounded. They were exposed to the elements, of course. There was obviously hunger and thirst and, quote, repeated shark attacks.
Mm.
So They get out there 8 days later, searching for survivors, and somehow they find 10. There are 10 people still alive. Among the information the Navy learns from these survivors was the fact that Frank, Joe, and Matt Sullivan were all killed instantly in the attack.
Ooh.
Al and George survived the attack. Mm-hmm. But Al had drowned on the second day.
Oh.
He was too weak to keep himself afloat, and he just slipped off whatever he was floating on and drowned. And then George was very badly burned, but he had survived for 4 or 5 days before he suffered from delirium as a result of hypernatremia, which is a condition you probably know. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's when you eat too many nuts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? You're not as far off as I would have expected. This is a condition that results from too much sodium in the blood.
See? Told you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know it all. Mm-hmm. So he had this kind of this salt-induced dementia from all the water, and he climbs over the side of the raft and throws himself into the water, thinking that'll be his salvation.
Right. Yeah. More salt. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it isn't here, I guess.
It's, oh no, sorry. And he does die. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't work out in the favor of life. So here's a sad fact that I will not press a button for. The Navy actually was planning, like, once this ship reached Espiritu Santo, the Navy was like, we should start taking this whole, like, split up brothers thing pretty seriously. And the Navy had issued orders to reassign two of the Sullivan brothers when they came back to Espiritu Santo. So, of course, had they done that earlier, at least two of the Sullivan boys would have survived. And if they had acted quicker, another two would have survived from the ship. So, pretty big fuck-ups from the U.S. Navy, I would say. Now, of course, it's... so, I know what you're thinking. Can it get worse? Let's find out.
We're already having such a great time. Let's keep going in this direction.
This is an active war theater, right? So the Navy is not allowed to reveal to the public that the Juno had been lost. So they have to pretend as if it had not been lost.
Right. Yeah. Juno's fine.
Juno's fine. So the parents and Genevieve, they know nothing. No, any of this has happened. Now, they do know that letters home from the boys have stopped arriving.
Oh, so maybe they think they're mad.
So they're like, did we do something wrong? This makes them pretty anxious. So finally, Aletta, the mom, she writes to the Bureau of Naval Personnel in January 1943. It's been 2 months since the Juno sank. So 2 months later, she writes the Bureau. She tells them there are rumors that the survivors claimed that all five brothers were killed in action. And she just asks, can you please tell us what happened?
Yeah.
We would really like to know if all of our children are dead. And Genevieve's like, wait, I'm here. So she writes a letter to the Bureau. Now she gets a response to that letter. They write a letter back, but the Bureau doesn't write the letter. The letter is written by President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Oh, never good.
It's a bad sign. So busy at this point.
That's definitely like a very high when you first open the letter, and then a very low once you realize.
Yeah, that's peaks and valleys. Yeah. Peaks and valleys, for sure. So FDR sends this letter on January 13th, all right? And he acknowledges in the letter all five Sullivans were missing in action. But does not say that they're dead.
All right. Right, sure.
I mean, you know.
I mean, they're in the ocean, but...
they're missing in the ocean for two months, but...
Who among us, right? Who among us hasn't run away to the ocean for months at a time?
Who among us haven't answered the call of the briny deep? Am I right, Aletta? Anyway,
if I understand correctly, two men were already married to the ocean, so perhaps they have run away with their lost bride.
Oh, boy. We're going to get emails about this one. So he sends a letter on January 13th. Now, by the time the letter arrives, it's too late because on January 12th, the day before, three men in uniform knocked on the door of the house. And when Tom, the dad, opens the door, A naval officer says, quote, "I have some news for you about your boys."
Mm.
And Tom says, "Which one?" The officer replies, quote, "I'm sorry, all five." So they already knew the boys were dead. Now the Sullivan brothers become pretty instantly, they become national heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people start calling them the Fighting Sullivan Brothers. FDR sends another letter, this one of condolences.
Mm-hmm.
Pope Pius the 7th, no, 12th, that's how Roman numerals work. Pope Pius the 12th, who was not from Chicago, so we like him, I guess, less.
Yeah.
He sent a silver medal and a rosary to the family, which is nice. And like, if Pope is sending you something,
yeah.
the story must have been very big.
You don't hear the Pope weighing in a whole lot on like war heroes, you know?
No,
it tends to be something
mostly
they kinda...
just on draft dodgers.
Yeah.
And importantly, later in 1943, that same year, the U.S. Navy has a brand new ship.
Mm-hmm.
They're launching. They name this ship. They scrap the original name, mm-hmm. and they give it a new name, the USS The Sullivans, which I love what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's a great tribute.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't just call it USS Sullivan.
I mean, like
USS The Sullivan. It's so hard to say. I don't know. That'll be pedantic, but USS The Sullivans. And Aletta, the mom, she actually christened the ship when it launched.
Oh, it's very nice.
And I think the Sullivan brother who had a son named Jimmy,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember which brother that was, but Jimmy actually ended up serving on that ship.
Oh, later. Okay.
Yeah. So this is obviously an incredibly kind tribute, but I feel like, and this, the story might bear this out, let's keep reading and find out, but I don't think you should name a thing after an unspeakable tragedy.
I mean, it's
it's a very nice honorarium.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We saw with the Chicago Fire, mm-hmm. yeah. the soccer team, terrible now. And see with the SS, the Sullivans. Because it's going to carry that spectral weight, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The USS, the Sullivans, was active during World War II, and immediately crew members start seeing shadow figures moving through the hallways.
Okay.
One of the more famous apparitions is a human-shaped cloud of black mist that makes a regular circuit around the ship as if it's on patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And there is documentation, U.S. Naval documentation, of one sailor who was on night watch making the rounds on the ship, when he turns a corner and he comes face to face with a bloodied, burned man.
Ooh.
He quickly vanishes into thin air.
Thank goodness.
That is the best case scenario. Whew, I thought I was going to fill out a different kind of paperwork, and I didn't like that. That sailor later pointed to a photo of the Sullivan brothers that was posted on the ship,
mm-hmm.
And became extremely agitated.
Mm-hmm.
He pointed to one of the brothers in particular and said that he was the one who had appeared to him, burned and bloodied, and it was George, the injured brother who had been badly mm-hmm. burned and succumbed to delirium. George Sullivan's ghost also haunts the electrical system. For reasons, I guess. The ship, which today is on display at the Buffalo Naval and Servicemen's Park in Buffalo, New York, it'll sometimes turn on its own equipment. Tourists of the ship today often report radio equipment coming on by itself and broadcasting a strange garbled static that sometimes sounds like screams.
Ooh. Spooky.
And here's a fun fact.
Wham!
The story of the Sullivan brothers, at least in part, did indeed inspire the 1998 film Saving Private Ryan. They're actually briefly mentioned in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that movie, of course, the mm-hmm. brothers were separated.
Right.
Mostly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Still, somehow, all killed except for one. Bad. It's bad. It's bad. There's no winning in war. Is what...
See,
Tom Hanks has taught us.
Yeah, but if they'd based it directly off of this story, it would be a a pretty bad movie. It, you know,
pretty short too. Yeah,
pretty short, pretty horrible.
Can you go find the last Manning Sullivan? I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so.
Was he the one that was burnt up and at the bottom of the ocean? Yeah, I think that's it then. Yeah, 20 minutes, yeah. End of movie.
Yeah.
Also, we don't come off so good in the movie, just so you know.
Can we do a different story instead? Can we just like make something up? That would be, that feels better.
Let's take like the theme here where we're doing the right thing. Let's make a whole movie about the right thing that we're doing.
Yes. Let's be brave.
Yes.
Yeah, let's go help everyone who needs help. Let's be the ones who go in and help.
Yeah.
Let's not have any bureaucratic nonsense. Let's just, you know, everything, all the paperwork is seen immediately in our story, right?
And if that doesn't work, two words. Tom Hanks. Thank you. Thank you.
Here's $200 million. Make me a movie.
Also, make sure the first 20 minutes of it make everybody throw up. That's the best part of it. 20 minutes.
Yeah, we do.
Everybody in America throws up when they watch it. Young, old.
Two-thirds of that budget has to go into making the opening 20 minutes of that movie so hyper-realistic and terrible that everyone, and I mean, hey, listen to me. Look me in the eyes. Yeah. I'm saying, I mean everyone throws up. I want movie theaters across America completely unable to hire new people to work there because the last people all quit because they had to clean up so much vomit from so many people.
I want this to be the GWAR concert of World War II films.
Do we have a deal? Of course we do.
Absolutely.
Of course we do. You said Tom Hanks still in? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have a deal.
We were in the throw up thing by him. He's like totally in. Totally in. He loves it.
I don't know. It's weird. What if we have Matt Damon? Can we afford Tom Hanks and Matt Damon? Mm. Not for the whole movie.
No. Just
what if
like,
we like just
brief glimpses. Brief glimpses.
Yeah, yeah. Just like a quick like camera tilt to Matt Damon once. Yeah. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. We've been paying Damon by the second for the last few films. And it's worked out pretty good, actually.
We do need to have Tom Sizemore in it.
Yeah.
And so that's going to... That's gonna,
you'd be surprised how much of Damon we cut out of Rounders. But it saved us a lot of money.
It's still a pretty good flick.
It really is.
Story's very different. Yeah. Edward Norton is talking to himself for half of that movie. But boy. It still worked, I think. Still worked. I wonder, was Tom Sizemore in that one? Or is he in A Thin Red Line? Do I need to have Jeremy cut that out? Let's Google. Let's see.
Let's see what Jeremy has to cut out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's in Saving Private. Yeah, all I got it right. Jeremy, leave it in, Jeremy. Don't cut it out. Leave it all in.
And leave this in, too.
Yeah, tell everyone that I didn't know for sure. Tom Sizemore. Absolutely. Did he die? He was in the news a lot for a very brief but concentrated amount of time.
Yeah, I want to say he did something bad.
He did sex stuff. Yeah.
I don't even want to make a claim.
Let's Google it.
Yes.
All right, we'll do that on our free time. Anyway, so that is the story of the USS the Sullivans, and the fighting Sullivans themselves. At least one of whom haunts the ship that is their namesake. Feels pretty weird to do a whole suite of war hero ghosts that we got to make jokes about, huh? how we backdoored into this one.
If you're gonna pick a theme, this is a pretty good one.
Yeah. I think we are gonna have to do the USS Arizona next week.
Yeah,
put a real nice button on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know how you like those multi-ghost ghost stories, and there's like, I don't know, 1,700 ghosts on the USS Arizona. So
it's a lot. Sure. And I've been to the USS Arizona to the memorial there, and it's we'll find some things that are some jokes for sure. For sure. I'm going to really rely on you for that episode because you have not been there, I assume, since you didn't know it was a thing that existed. So that's going to, please come prepared next week to make lots of real funny jokes. Come back well rested and well showered from your Amtrak trip. and that's going to be really helpful for me. Any questions or concerns about the Fighting Sullivans?
No. I'm, again, a little disappointed that the Hollywood kind of, like, literally took nothing from the story except for, Midwestern, five boys.
Oh, brothers?
Go. Yeah. Brothers? Yeah. Sure.
Mm-hmm. We love brothers. Mm. All right, then. Well, then I should tell you that Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. The notes this week were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team consists of Kai Valonis, Jen Jones, and Sam Murdoch. Merchandise is designed by Mariah at Fox and Quill Studio, and also maybe by her husband, Ben. He does a lot of stuff for this show. I don't think designing is his gig, but maybe it is. Mostly he does the
he's a hype man. He's a hype man.
Yeah. He's also the, yeah. He's this. Yeah. And you're gonna want to watch YouTube for that one. But also does a lot of the computer stuff, the logistics. That's what I'm talking about. Here we go.
Grandmother. Oh, he does the computer stuff.
Oh, you know, he does the computers. Yeah, no, he goes on the internet.
He doesn't do the drawing with the pencils. He does the computer stuff.
And then he watches his stories and goes for a nice walk. But his bunions, they do bother him, so he doesn't go for too long. Anyways, thank you to all of them. That's going to do it for us for now. And I will just say, do not ever name a ship after a fleet of dead brothers, or else you might be the next subject of Is This a Ghost?